Jessica, girl, I wish I could stand in your place and take your sufferings, but each of us must make her own path. I know. You're as dear to me as any of my own daughters, but I cannot let that interfere with duty. I understand the necessity. What you did, Jessica, and why you did it, we both know. But kindness forces me to tell you, there's little chance your lad will be the Bene Gesserit totality. You mustn't let yourself hope too much.
Jessica shook tears from the corners of her eyes. It was an angry gesture.
You make me feel like a little girl again, reciting my first lesson.
She forced the words out.
Humans must never submit to animals.
A dry sob shook her. In a low voice, she said,
I've been so lonely. It should be one of the tests, the old woman said. Humans are almost always lonely. Now summon the boy. He's had a long, frightening day, but he's had time to think and remember, and I must ask the other questions about these dreams of his.
Jessica nodded, went to the door of the meditation chamber, opened it.
Paul, come in now, please.
Paul emerged with a stubborn slowness. He stared at his mother as though she were a stranger. Wariness veiled his eyes when he glanced at the Reverend Mother, but this time he nodded to her, the nod one gives an equal. He heard his mother close the door behind him.
Young man, the old woman said, let's return to this dream business. What do you want? Do you dream every night? Not dreams worth remembering. I can remember every dream, but some are worth remembering and some aren't. How do you know the difference? I just know it.
The old woman glanced at Jessica, back to Paul.
What did you dream last night? Was it worth remembering?
Yes. Paul closed his eyes.
I dreamed a cavern, and water, and a girl there, very skinny, with big eyes. Her eyes are all blue, no whites in them. I talk to her and tell her about you, about seeing the Reverend Mother on Caladan.
Paul opened his eyes.
And the thing you tell this strange girl about seeing me, did it happen today?
Paul thought about this, then,
yes, I tell the girl you came and put a stamp of strangeness on me. Stamp of strangeness, the old woman breathed,
and again she shot a glance at Jessica, returned her attention to Paul.
Tell me truly now, Paul, do you often have dreams of things that happen afterward exactly as you dreamed them?
Yes, and I've dreamed about that girl before.
Oh, you know her?
I will know her.
Tell me about her.
Again, Paul closed his eyes.
We're in a little place in some rocks where it's sheltered. It's almost night, but it's hot, and I can see patches of sand out of an opening in the rocks. We're waiting for something, for me to go meet some people. And she's frightened, but trying to hide it from me, and I'm excited. And she says, tell me about the waters of your home world, Usul.
Paul opened his eyes.
Isn't that strange? My home world's Caladan. I've never even heard of a planet called Usul. Is there more to this dream?
Jessica prompted.
Yes, but maybe she was calling me Usul, Paul said. I just thought of that.
Again, he closed his eyes.
She asks me to tell her about the waters, and I take her hand, and I say I'll tell her a poem, and I tell her the poem, but I have to explain some of the words, like beach and surf and seaweed and seagulls.
What poem? The Reverend Mother asked.
Paul opened his eyes.
It's just one of Gurney Halleck's tone poems for sad times.
Behind Paul, Jessica began to recite.
I remember salt smoke from a beach fire, and shadows under the pines, solid, clean, fixed. Seagulls perched at the tip of land, white upon green. And a wind comes through the pines to sway the shadows. The seagulls spread their wings, lift, and fill the sky with screeches. And I hear the wind blowing across our beach, and the surf, and I see that our fire has scorched the seaweed.
That's the one, Paul said. The old woman stared at Paul, then,
Young man, as a proctor of the Bene Gesserit, I seek the Kwisatz Haderach, the male who truly can become one of us. Your mother sees this possibility in you, but she sees with the eyes of a mother. Possibility I see, too, but no more.
She fell silent, and Paul saw that she wanted him to speak. He waited her out. Presently she said,
"As you will, then. You've depths in you, that I'll grant."
"May I go now?" he asked. "Don't you want to hear what the Reverend Mother can tell you about the Kwisatz Haderach?"
Jessica asked.
"She said those who tried for it died."
"But I can help you with a few hints at why they failed," the Reverend Mother said.
"She talks of hints," Paul thought. "She doesn't really know anything."
And he said,
"Hint, then." "And be damned to me?"
She smiled wryly, a crisscross of wrinkles in the old face.
"Very well. That which submits rules."
He felt astonishment. She was talking about such elementary things as tension within meaning. Did she think his mother had taught him nothing at all?
"That's a hint?" he asked. "We are not here to bandy words or quibble over their meaning," the old woman said. "The willow submits to the wind and prospers, until one day it is many willows, a wall against the wind. This is the willow's purpose."
Paul stared at her. She said, "purpose," and he felt the word buffet him, reinfecting him with terrible purpose. He experienced a sudden anger at her. Fatuous old witch with her mouth full of platitudes.
"You think I could be this Kwisatz Haderach," he said. "You talk about me, but you haven't said one thing about what we can do to help my father. I've heard you talking to my mother. You talk as though my father were dead. Well, he isn't."
"If there were a thing to be done for him, we'd have done it," the old woman growled. "We may be able to salvage you. Doubtful, but possible. But for your father, nothing. When you've learned to accept that as a fact, you've learned a real Bene Gesserit lesson."
Paul saw how the words shook his mother. He glared at the old woman. How could she say such a thing about his father? What made her so sure? His mind seethed with resentment. The Reverend Mother looked at Jessica.
"You've been training him in the way. I've seen the signs of it. I'd have done the same in your shoes, and devil take the rules."
Jessica nodded.
"Now, I caution you," said the old woman, "to ignore the regular order of training. His own safety requires the voice. He already has a good start in it, but we both know how much more he needs, and that desperately."
She stepped close to Paul, stared down at him.
"Goodbye, young human. I hope you make it, but if you don't, well, we shall yet succeed."
Once more she looked at Jessica. A flicker sign of understanding passed between them. Then the old woman swept from the room, her robes hissing, with not another backward glance. The room and its occupants already were shut from her thoughts. But Jessica had caught one glimpse of the Reverend Mother's face as she turned away. There had been tears on the seamed cheeks. The tears were more unnerving than any other word or sign that had passed between them this day.
You have read that Muad'Dib had no playmates his own age on Caladan. The dangers were too great. But Muad'Dib did have wonderful companion teachers. There was Gurney Halleck, the troubadour warrior. You will sing some of Gurney's songs as you read along in this book. There was Thufir Hawat, the old Mentat master of assassins, who struck fear even into the heart of the Padishah Emperor. There were Duncan Idaho, the swordmaster of the Ginaz. Dr. Wellington Ewey, a name black in treachery but bright in knowledge. The Lady Jessica, who guided her son in the Bene Gesserit way. And, of course, the Duke Leto, whose qualities as a father have long been overlooked.
From A Child's History of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. Thufir Hawat slipped into the training room of Castle Caladan, closed the door softly. He stood there for a moment, feeling old and tired and storm-leathered. His left leg ached where it had been slashed once in the service of the old duke.
3 generations of them now, he thought.
He stared across the big room, bright with the light of noon pouring through the skylights, saw the boy seated with back to the door, intent on papers and charts spread across an L-table.
How many times must I tell that lad never to settle himself with his back to a door?
Hawat cleared his throat. Paul remained bent over his studies. A cloud shadow passed over the skylights. Again, Hawat cleared his throat. Paul straightened, spoke without turning. I know. I'm sitting with my back to a door.
Howitt suppressed a smile, strode across the room. Paul looked up at the grizzled old man who stopped at a corner of the table. Howitt's eyes were two pools of alertness in a dark and deeply seamed face.
I heard you coming down the hall, Paul said, and I heard you open the door.
The sounds I make could be imitated.
I'd know the difference.
He might at that, Howitt thought. That witch mother of his is giving him the deep training, certainly. I wonder what her precious school thinks of that. Maybe that's why they sent the old proctor here, to whip our dear Lady Jessica into line.
Howitt pulled up a chair across from Paul, sat down facing the door. He did it pointedly, leaned back, and studied the room. It struck him as an odd place suddenly, a stranger place with most of its hardware already gone off to Arrakis. A training table remained, and a fencing mirror with its crystal prisms quiescent, the target dummy beside it patched and padded, looking like an ancient foot soldier maimed and battered in the wars.
There stand I, Howitt thought.
Thufir, what are you thinking? Paul asked.
Howitt looked at the boy.
I was thinking we'll all be out of here soon, and likely never see the place again.
Does that make you sad?
Sad? Nonsense. Parting with friends is a sadness. A place is only a place.
He glanced at the charts on the table.
And Arrakis is just another place.
Did my father send you up to test me?
Howitt scowled. The boy had such observing ways about him. He nodded.
You're thinking it'd have been nicer if he'd come up himself, but you must know how busy he is. He'll be along later.
I've been studying about the storms on Arrakis.
The storms? I see.
They sound pretty bad.
That's too cautious a word, bad. Those storms build up across 6,000 or 7,000 kilometers of flatlands, feed on anything that can give them a push. Coriolis force, other storms, anything that has an ounce of energy in it. They can blow up to 700 kilometers an hour, loaded with everything loose that's in their way. Sand, dust, everything. They can eat flesh off bones and etch the bones to slivers.
Why don't they have weather control?
Arrakis has special problems. Costs are higher, and there'd be maintenance and the like. The Guild wants a dreadful high price for satellite control, and your father's house isn't one of the big rich ones, lad. You know that.
Have you ever seen the Fremen?
The lad's mind is darting all over today,
Howitt thought.
Like as not, I have seen them, he said. There's little to tell them from the folk of the Graben and Sink. They all wear those great flowing robes, and they stink to heaven in any closed space. It's from those suits they wear, call them still suits, that reclaim the body's own water.
Paul swallowed, suddenly aware of the moisture in his mouth, remembering a dream of thirst. That people could want so for water they had to recycle their body moisture struck him with a feeling of desolation.
Water's precious there, he said.
Howitt nodded, thinking,
perhaps I'm doing it, getting across to him the importance of this planet as an enemy. It's madness to go in there without that caution in our minds.
Paul looked up at the skylight, aware that it had begun to rain. He saw the spreading wetness on the gray metaglass.
Water, he said.
You'll learn a great concern for water, Howitt said. As the Duke's son, you'll never want for it, but you'll see the pressures of thirst all around you.
Paul wet his lips with his tongue, thinking back to the day a week ago and the ordeal with the Reverend Mother. She, too, had said something about water starvation.
You'll learn about the funeral plains, she'd said, about the wilderness that is empty, the wasteland where nothing lives except the spice and the sandworms.